The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, August the 5th, 2025. It is 1 minute past 10 here in London, England, making it 2 minutes past 11. Sorry, 1 minute past 11, coming up to 2 minutes past 11 about now in Cape Town, South Africa, where my good friend Dr. Peter Hammond is. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. Thank you, Andrew.
Excellent. And did you hear the intro this time?
I could hear it fully, yes.
Excellent. We've had some technical issues, folks. As you know, Skype closed down, which we used to use, and we've been using something else and wasn't working how it should be. Found out that updates were deployed, these wonderful updates that never seem to make anything better. They just seem to screw up all the settings that you've got. And I made the comment that, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to update things if it's going to change people's settings. I mean, imagine if there's someone who's disabled, somebody who's blind, who has to have these things set up by somebody else, and they're going to have to keep paying out to have things reset up because the company has knocked out all their settings. But this isn't my show to moan. That's on Saturday. This is Peter's show, entitled The Real Story of How to Stand for Faith and Freedom in a Time of Apostasy and Tyranny. And Peter, where would you like to start us off with today's topic?
Well, we should always start with the problem, then move on to the solution. So I think we can all see we're living in a time of apostasy and tyranny. We are confronted by deception in the news media, distraction and defilement in the entertainment industry, and indoctrination in the so-called education institutions, which don't seem to do much educating, but they do a lot of indoctrinating. We're intimidated by politicians and by the bureaucratic bullies, and by the rise of the thought police. As George Orwell warned us in 1984, the time will come when we have thought police working under the Ministry of Truth, which is committed to propaganda, where the Ministry of Peace deals in war, where the Ministry of Plenty deals with rationing and shortages and starvation, when the Ministry of Love deals with torture. And so we have the thought police, as evidenced by the 2020 lockdown lunacy, masquerade madness, pandemic panic paranoia, and not only the paranoia, but the propaganda of the salvation by vaccination COVID cult. Remember the safe and effective vaccine, which had been thoroughly tested, although the head of Pfizer later admitted, no, we didn't test, we didn't have time. And yes, well, now we're learning that about 20% of people who got the vaccine have adverse consequences, and many people have died from the vaccine, more than even died from the COVID itself. But as Jeremiah 9 verse 5 says, everyone will deceive his neighbor and will not speak the truth. They've taught their tongue to speak lies, and they weary themselves to commit iniquity. So that is plainly part of the problem. We've been confronted by this rising tide of tyranny and apostasy. And in this age of indoctrination and intimidation, it's essential that we respond with resistance. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. It is so important that we know what we believe, why we believe it, how to defend it in argument, And we need to fear God, not man. Jesus said, do not fear man who can only kill the body, and after that he can do nothing else. Our Lord Jesus said, fear God who can destroy both body and soul in hell forever. He is whom you should fear. So we need to be freed from the fear of man, and we need to learn to fear God alone. Like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the three friends of Daniel, we must not bow, we must not bend. Our God whom we serve is able to save us, and he will. But even if he doesn't, we still will not bow to the idols of this world, nor will we serve their agenda. Galatians 5 verse 1 says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again with the yoke of slavery. I believe that the first and most important step of resistance is to disconnect from the world's depressing disinformation and distraction. Switch off and disconnect your TV. Cancel the cable subscriptions. Refuse to listen to their lies. I think one of the best decisions my wife and I ever made was we will not have a TV in our house. And even before any of our children were born, we had decided no TV for us. We are going to choose what we watch and what we read. We put bookshelves in every room. We have floor-to-ceiling bookshelves. We made sure that we lived in the library and our children were brought up loving to read and loving books. And, you know, that's the ultimate language of resistance. Reading is resistance in an age of distraction. And so Psalm 101 verse 7 declares, he who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not continue in my presence. And so we need to determine to defy their defilement. Boycott blasphemy and delete the defilement. So much of what is called the entertainment industry, particularly from Hollywood, which is just a blasphemous idolatry factory, it's more like defilement than entertainment. We need to boycott the blasphemous. We need to delete that which defiles. We need to refuse exploitation in the name and the guise of entertainment. Revelation 18, verse 4, we read, come out from amongst her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. So much of what is called the mainstream media has become the lamestream, dealing more in deception and disinformation than actual information. Whenever you see some major news focus, you need to look around for the real story that they're trying to distract you from. Far from reporting without fear or favor, as they claim, the anti-Christian, pro-abortion, pro-perversion agenda of Slime Magazine, Newspeak, Useless News and World Report, the Communist News Network, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation or the Bias Broadcasting Corporation, the Sunday Crimes, it all seems more like propaganda, distraction and deception. Proverbs 30 verse 8 says, remove falsehood and lies far from me. The great Russian author Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who, remember, spent years as a slave in the gulag in the Arctic hellhole of Siberia, he wrote, the simple step of a courageous individual is not to take part in the lie. The pillar of the state is the lie. The lie is the foundation of the modern state. But one word of truth outweighs the world. You can resolve to live your life with integrity. And so Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, what brought down the Soviet Union was the fact that people stopped believing the lie. They stopped applauding the lie. They stopped repeating the lie. So Alexander Solzhenitsyn challenges people, let your credo be, let the lie come into the world, but not through me. When we refuse to repeat the lie, when we refuse to believe the lie, when we refuse to applaud the lie, then the state will fall. And that's what happened to the Soviet Union. And the Iron Curtain collapsed because people stopped believing the lie. We need to refuse to allow our children to be indoctrinated in state indoctrination gulags. What the world calls education has in all too many cases been distorted into indoctrination, where state schools are increasingly more like indoctrination gulags than place of education. Because education is teaching children how to think critically, as opposed to indoctrination, which teaches you what to think. Now, by God's grace, I was brought up in Rhodesia, and my first history teacher in high school was also a member of Parliament, Mr. Rhys Davies, and he said to us, beware the victor's version. Wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. And so Mr. Rhys Davies, who is also a member of Parliament, and when I said, sir, how can you be a member of Parliament and a teacher? He said, we don't get paid for being members of parliament. It's an honorary position. We need a real job too. Well, that's back in the 1970s where members of parliament didn't actually get paid for being members of parliament, but it's all changed now. I think for many people in parliament, it's now a get-rich-quick scheme. Certainly in South Africa, that's the way it turned out to be, sadly. But he said, you know that the British government is lying now about us here in Rhodesia. Why do you believe them about anything else in history, whether the First World War, the Second World War, the Anglo-Boer War, anything else? And he should know because Mr. Rhys-Davies' father was one of the members of parliament, one of thousands of British people who were detained without a trial, without a charge under Winston Churchill during the Second World War. It included members of the royal family. It included admirals and generals. There were thousands of British people, including members of the House of Lords and the House of Commons, who were detained without trial just because they supported peace or negotiations or something other than what was the state agenda under Winston Churchill in the Second World War in Britain. And so he said, beware the victor's version. Governments lie. And school textbooks often have these lies entrenched. And we know that because I had a school textbook that said that the Germans committed the Katyn Forest massacre and murdering all the Polish officers and NCOs in the Second World War, which, of course, the Polish people never accepted. And they persisted until, in the end, even Boris Yeltsin and Vladimir Putin admitted, and the Russian parliament released the facts and the files, that the Katyn Forest massacre had been done by order of Joseph Stalin, Uncle Joe, as Winston Churchill called him. But the Russians had done the atrocity, and the British textbooks and the American textbooks just conveniently blamed it all on the Germans, got Germans hung at Nuremberg for murdering Polish prisoners of war, when everyone knew, including all the judges at Nuremberg, that that was a fraud and a farce. They were hanging their German defeated enemies for what they knew the Soviets had done. And this is part of the lies. I remember hearing, for example, how the Royal Air Force flew in supplies during the Second World War for the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And when I went to Warsaw, ministering behind the Iron Curtain, smuggling in Bibles and helping the persecuted church, the Christians in Eastern Europe saw my South African flag on my lapel and said, thank you so much for sending through the only help that we received during the Warsaw Uprising. And I said, but what did South Africa have to do with that? And it wasn't in history books. The history books said that the Royal Air Force flew in the supplies. In fact, the Poles knew it was the South African Air Force. They flew all the way from Italy across Central Europe, losing so many of their men, it was almost a suicide mission. But apparently Winston Churchill didn't want to waste English forces on this, so he used the colonials, the disposables, and so the South African Air Force got the job. And our men flew through the only resupplies and aid that the guerrillas, the resistance fighters in Warsaw received during the Warsaw Uprising in 1944. While the Red Army stood outside across the Vistula River, waiting for the Polish resistance to be annihilated before they came in. And as Stalin said, better let the Germans kill him or we will have to do it later. And so they encouraged the Poles to rise up, and then they stood back while they got wiped out. And the only supply they got was from the South African Air Force, except the history books edited that out because South Africa was not in the best of graces at the end of the Second World War. So when they were condemning us for having racial discrimination, the separate but equal policies of Hendrik Verwoerd and others, South Africa wasn't the flavor of the month, and so they just changed history books. Just like the people in Ethiopia, Abyssinia, were told that they'd been liberated by the British army. In fact, it was the South African army. 1941, the South African army went in, the Springbok Legion, liberated Abyssinia, Addis Ababa, the capital of Abyssinia, what is today Ethiopia, and set the people free. In fact, it was the South African army, the Springbok Legion, who also abolished slavery. After centuries of slavery in Abyssinia, it was abolished by order of the Springbok Legion before withdrawing from Abyssinia and handing back to Emperor Haile Selassie. And yet the history books found that embarrassing. So they changed the South African army for the British Army that the British had liberated Abyssinia when the South Africans said. And there's so many cases where history just decides to change things because it's no longer that popular. And similarly, when the Battle of Britain film was made, the interesting that even veterans of the war, the Battle of Britain, like South African Air Force and Royal Rhodesian Air Force, who had flown and fought in support of Britain during the Battle of Britain, they were left out of the credits at the end because South Africa was no longer that popular, neither was Rhodesia. And Britain was putting sanctions on Rhodesia at that time. And Ian Smith, who had been a veteran, who had flown in the Royal Rhodesian Air Force, fighting not only in North Africa, but also in the Battle of Britain, they weren't allowed to come and join the celebrations in 1965 because they were now no longer popular. And so there was this on and on rewriting of history, just like George Orwell warned in 1984 book, How Many Truth, the Ministry of Truth is continually rewriting history. Every date changed, every place changed, every event changed until nobody knows even what the correct year is because everything has been so changed and distorted. And right is called wrong and wrong is called right. And certain people get deplatformed or what is it called? Unpersoned and disappear down the memory hole. Well, that's what a lot of so-called education is today. And so we need to be praying what Proverbs 30 verse 8 says, remove falsehood and lies far from me. Anna Solzhenitsyn said, we've got to resolve to refuse to applaud the lie, refuse to believe the lie, refuse to repeat the lie. Let the lie come into the world, but not through me. And so teaching children today, many children are being taught fear instead of faith in the schools. And they're playing the masquerade rather than engaging in real education. Over 500 years ago, Professor Martin Luther warned, I'm much afraid that schools will prove to be wide gates to hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them on the hearts of youth. I advise no one to place his child where the Scriptures do not reign paramount. Every institution in which men are not constantly occupied with the Word of God must become corrupt. I think that's what we're seeing time and again. Many of our schools are actually wide gates to hell, sorry to say. Colossians 2 verse 8 warns us, beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of this world, and not according to Christ. And this is a great danger. We've got to distrust big tech, big pharma, big business, and big government. And the globalist agenda advances the communist goals, eroding freedom and centralizing power in big government and big media. As 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 12 and 19 says, 2 Peter 2:19, while they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. And you could write 2 Peter 2, verse 19 across almost every political party out there. We need to disconnect from the New World Order indoctrination, disinformation, distraction, and defilement industries. We need to resist censorship, refuse to take part in their masquerade madness, their lockdown lunacy, and their virus vaccination victimization. Instead, we should support decentralization, a free market, and big families. We need to invest in Bibles, freedom, history, homes, family, and faith. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. 2 Corinthians 3:17. Reading is an act of resistance in a landscape of distraction. Resistance begins with reading. We need to invest in the mind. Readers make leaders. A reading Christian is a growing Christian. I remember one of the first books I read that disrupted my whole way of thinking about history and the future was called The Last Secret, published in 1975. It was as a result of the files being unbroken after 30 years being sealed about Operation Keelhaul, the betrayal of millions of Russians and Ukrainians in Western Europe being forced at bayonet point across the river, across the Danube, into the hands of the NKVD of the Soviet Union. Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt agreed to the demands of Joseph Stalin to take all Russians and Ukrainians, East Europeans, Lithuanians, Latvians, Estonians, all the people of Eastern Europe, even if they'd never been born or lived in Eastern Europe, at all, even those whose parents had fled from the Bolshevik Revolution, every Russian and Ukrainian in Western Europe was to be forced across the border into the hands of the NKVD. Some of them had fought for the Germans in Operation Barbarossa. Many were children who had never even lived in Russia, but they were all betrayed from the Cossacks all the way through to Ukrainians, forced across the border. And this had been sealed for 30 years, and this secret was unveiled, and it was published as the book The Last Secret, although it's by no means the last secret. There's hordes more still to come. But anyway, that undermined my confidence in the official narrative. As my teacher said, beware the victor's version. And then came out the Lusitania, which also, after 60 years of the Lusitania files having been sealed, in 1975, out came the Lusitania files and a book, Lusitania, showing that the Lusitania was carrying tons of explosives and artillery shells and millions of rounds of ammunition. And that the single torpedo happened to hit the area under the waterline where so much of these explosives were stored, and that caused the secondary explosion, which sank the ship. Lusitania was one of the largest ships in the world. It was second only to the Titanic in size, and no one torpedo could have sunk the Lusitania. The Lusitania sank because it was carrying huge amounts of weaponry, which, of course, was in breach of international law, breach of the Hague Conventions, and so on. And they were smuggling contraband weapons in what was meant to be a civilian ship. So at the reality of the Lusitania, when those files came out, that was another nail in the coffin of my trust in the official narrative. Up till then, I'd been going to movies and, you know, cheering for the good guys according to the narrative of these films, which are normally more propaganda than anything else, you know, based on true story, inspired by real events, all that sort of thing, which is often lies, lies, and more lies. But we in Rhodesia were experiencing the deception. I mean, here my father had fought all 6 years of the Second World War, on the Allied side, of course, in North Africa, in the 8th Army, as a bombardier. And then I'm saying to my father, Dad, didn't you fight for the English? And he said, yes. So why are they sanctioning us? Why are they supporting our enemies? Why are they wanting to destroy us in Rhodesia? And, you know, it's a good question. And that's guided me for so much of my life to dig into history and find out what's the real story. Because we've been lied to on so many different levels. And reading is that act of resistance in the landscape of distraction. So many books I've read that opened up my eyes to things that I didn't know any other way. Another one I remember reading that was a great opening of my eyes was the Fearful Master, and by G. Edward Griffith on the United Nations. And the title comes from a quote by George Washington, where the first president of America warned his people, beware of entangling alliances. Do not get involved in Europe's wars. And he said, government is not reason. Government is force. And like a fire, it makes a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And so, speaking about the United Nations, it's a dangerous, it's a fearful master. So if you think of fire, a fire in your home can be useful, can warm the fireplace, can cook food. And there's a lot of good things fire can do, but it must stay in the fireplace. If the fire breaks out of the bounds of the fireplace and it touches your furniture, well, most furniture's highly flammable. Most of the curtains are extremely flammable. Hairspray is very flammable. Hair is very flammable. You don't want a fire to get out of the fireplace. And then it can endanger the entire house. And having served in the fire brigade, I understand this very well. And I've walked in ashes of many a burned out building. And it's so important for us to recognize government is a dangerous servant. It needs to be chained down by the Constitution, restricted, separation of powers, all of that. But even as dangerous as it is as a servant, government makes a more fearful master. And when the United Nations comes into a country, they tend to be even more dangerous. And I know this because I've ministered in the Congo. The biggest peacekeeping operation of the UN in the world is in the Congo. And yet the Congo is one of the most lawless failed states on the world. The Congo has had many millions of people killed, and amongst them, tens of thousands of Christians, hundreds of missionaries murdered in the Congo. And this was done despite or maybe even because of the United Nations involvement and interference in that country. And the fearful master book documents the kind of atrocities committed under the UN. And even today, I was just preaching in a Congolese congregation this last Sunday, and the Congolese tell me how the rebels behave the best, the army behaves badly, but the worst of all is the United Nations so-called peacekeepers. They commit mass rapes. I think the largest mass rape case since the Second World War is going on in The Hague right now against hundreds of United Nations peacekeepers who committed mass rapes of hundreds of civilian victims in the Congo. The Congo is just one example of how, where the United Nations is most involved with most of the money and most of the manpower, you have most of the problems. It's one of the most lawless countries on the planet. And if people think the United Nations is the solution, they need to look at the Congo. The UN is the problem. They're not the solution. And it is quite clear we need to be careful how we live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Ephesians 5:15. Good books can really build up a strong backbone of resistance. And I've now got a backbone of steel because of what I've read that makes me resist the New World Order because I've read books that expose what the New World Order does and what they stand for. It's so important that we rediscover our history. The founder of the modern communist movement, Karl Marx, declared, "The first battlefield is the rewriting of history." And his disciples have been super busy rewriting history, demonizing Christians, demonizing our ancestors and the people who built civilization, and glamorizing the Marxist mass murdering revolutionaries and the Antichrist persecutors of the church. So the first battlefield is the rewriting of history, which is why programs like this are so important. People need to know the real story. We need to resist the cancel culture. We need to resist the Marxist revolution, which is seeking to distort and to destroy our Christian heritage. We need to learn real history. This is a major step to real resistance to the New World Disorder, to the powers that should not be. We need to read books like What If Jesus Had Never Been Born, about Dr. James Kennedy, and How Christianity Transforms Civilization by Professor Alvin Smith. And I've contributed a few books like this to help us understand our history. Victorious Christians Who Changed the World, The Greatest Century of Reformation, The Greatest Century of Missions, Sketches from South African History. These and other biographies of those who built up Christian civilization are available from our Christian Liberty books, for example. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition. We read in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11. So instead of big government, we need big families. We need to respond to revolution with resistance and reformation. Instead of subjecting our children to the world's indoctrination, we need to invest in our children, invest in our grandchildren through home education, Bible-based, home-based Christian education. We need to support Christian schools, private schools, home-based education. We need to support Bible-based curriculums. These can be some of the most important, strategic, influential steps for faith and freedom that anyone could possibly take. And back in 1995, 30 years ago, I started Christian Liberty Books, which provides homeschooling books for South Africans. And in fact, my children, all four children, were taken through education based at home. My wife and I pioneered a lot of this. In fact, my oldest daughter was the first matric dance homeschool event. So she was part of the first homeschooling matric dance or school leavers prom, which was carried out in Cape Town. And when we started, there was the first homeschool expo had three exhibitors: Christian Liberty Books, Theocentric Christian Education, and Accelerated Christian Education, ACE, and CLB, TC, ACE. Just three exhibitors at the first homeschool expo. That's 30 years ago. Today, there's over 100 exhibitors in the homeschool expos, and not all are curriculum providers. Some are even universities that used to criticize the homeschooling, and now they've got on the bandwagon of homeschooling now that it's so successful. But interesting to see how home education now is being embraced by more and more people. Hundreds of thousands of people are using home education. It's a big vote of no confidence in government education, but traditional families are real resistance to revolution. Instead of the Marxist anti-Christian revolution and the promoters of perversion, one of the most effective, long-lasting acts of resistance is to be straight, get married to a God-fearing spouse, and have lots of children, and invest in those children by home-based, Bible-based education. And investing in future generations by reforming the family and raising up a new generation in the love and fear of the Lord will have long-lasting consequences. Deuteronomy 6, verse 6 says, "And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children." And we read in Deuteronomy 7, "Therefore, know that the Lord your God, he is God. He is the faithful God. He keeps covenant and mercy to a thousand generations of those who love him and who keep his commandments." That's Deuteronomy 7, verse 9. We need to resist the new world disorder by supporting alternative media. Refuse to be deceived. Refuse to be distracted by the disinformation industry of the new world disorder. And for this, we need to support alternative Christian media. And we've invested, for example, in South Africa with Joy Magazine and many different podcasts and websites and mailing lists. And, of course, supporting ACH and other alternative media is a vital part of resisting the new world disorder. Proverbs 15, verse 14 says, "The heart of him who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly." And you can see what you're getting in the BBC and CNN and CBS and NBC and all this is folly. Hollywood feeds on folly, and why should I want to support that? Instead of allowing ourselves to be defiled by the exploitative Hollywood blasphemy industry, we should support excellence in art and entertainment from Christian filmmakers. Like in America, they've got the Kendrick brothers who've produced so many great films, Fireproof being one of my favorites, but also Facing the Giants and War Room, Courageous. There's so many excellent films the Kendrick brothers have brought out, Overcome and others. And in South Africa, we've got Frans Cronier, who produces great Christian films. And there's some Christian musicians and artists who deserve to be supported, and Christian authors. Our standard should be Philippians 4, verse 8. "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." You know, there used to be a time that Hollywood produced great films on great themes. You just think of Quo Vadis or the Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur, you know, great films, great themes. And today there's so much trivia and garbage out there, but we should be having our arts and entertainment focusing on things that are praiseworthy and excellent and virtuous. One of the most practical acts of resistance that anyone can take against the new world disorder is to join a Bible study group or to start one. One of the most important things I ever did was starting a Bible study and prayer fellowship in the South African Army. And this group met every night of our time in the military for Bible study and prayer. And we often had all-night prayer meetings. And I must say that that Bible study group was such a vital, successful operation. Our whole mission grew out of it. And 20 years ago, I started a Reformation Society, which we've been meeting every night, every Thursday night now for the last 20 years. And the Reformation Society has birthed so many other movements and groups and actions for Reformation in South Africa and even overseas. So starting or joining a Bible study and prayer fellowship is one of the most strategic things you can possibly do. Start or support a Bible study, prayer, and action group. And can you start a Bible study, a prayer, and action group in your home or in your congregation or in your workplace or at your school or college? Romans 12 verse 2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God." Jeremiah 6 verse 16 says, "Stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths where the good way is and walk in it. Then you will find rest for your souls. Also, I've set watchmen over you saying, listen to the sound of the trumpet." And that's part of our job on ACH is to sound the trumpet, draw attention like Nehemiah had the trumpet by him that as he is seeking to rebuild the wall, when he could see that one part of the wall was under attack, they'd sound a trumpet that the others could gather at that one place that was under attack and join in a concerted defense. And so this is how we resist. Listen to the sound of the trumpet. Look at the old paths. See in history ways of excellence that we can learn from examples of excellence. We need to expose and oppose deceit, deception, and decadence. Ephesians 5 verse 11 says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. And in Ezekiel 22, we read that God seeks amongst them a man who can build up the wall and stand in the gap before him on behalf of the land so that he should not have to destroy it. Are you willing to stand in the gap and to make a difference? Also, what we can do to resist is to pray the Psalms. The Psalms are the biggest book of the Bible. They're the middle book of the Bible, the hymn book of the Bible, the prayer book of the Bible. We need to go back to the Psalms. Open up the Bible in the middle. Turn to the Psalms. Pray the Psalms. 90 of the 150 Psalms are imprecatory Psalms, praying against evil, praying for justice. And we need to pray for heaven-sent revival. Our nations are in danger. We need to have a tremendous back to the Bible reformation and revival. We need to revive the prayer meetings, and we need to pray the Psalms. Psalm 94 verse 16 says, who will rise up for me against evildoers? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? So, to make a stand for faith and freedom, we need to start or join a Bible study, prayer, and action group. We need to fear God alone. We need to be freed from the fear of men. We need to disconnect from the world's indoctrination and disinformation media. We need to invest in discipleship and mentorship. Make Christ's Great Commission your supreme ambitions. Make disciples of all nations. Teach obedience to all things the Lord has commanded. We need to stand up for Jesus. We need to step out in faith. We need to fight the good fight of faith. We need to speak for those who cannot speak for themselves. We need to invest in home-based education. Support alternative news media. Invest in future generations by raising up a new generation in the love and the fear of the Lord. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And victory is assured. God, who is almighty, all-knowing, and everywhere present, has assured victory. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. That is from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 57 to 58. God is almighty. God is all-powerful. He is the King of kings. He is the Lord of lords. Those who declare war on God will lose. Remember Bishop Stephen Bradley coming up the border, speaking to the South African Army back during the war in the 1970s, and he gave a message we could never forget. Bishop Stephen Bradley, who is a missionary from Australia, by the way, he planted many churches in South Africa, and he has a good personal friend. Bishop Bradley said, I'm not afraid of the communists. We can beat the communists. We have beaten them many times, and the communists are not good at war. They're good at deception. If we fight and resist, we will defeat the communists. That is not the problem. The real problem is God. If God is our enemy, we have no chance. Nobody can defeat God. And if we make God our enemy, we have no hope and no future. I think that is so true, and we need to repeat that throughout America, throughout Europe, throughout the British Isles. People need to recognize the real problem is not the communists. The real problem is not radical Islam. It's not even the New World Order. The real problem is if we make God our enemies, we're lost. If we're on God's side, we're on the winning side. Nobody can actually defeat God. As Psalm 2 says, you know, the nations may rise up in conspiracy against the Lord, but the Lord laughs. How can anybody defeat God? The Soviets tried and they failed, and the Berlin Wall came down, the Iron Curtain collapsed. And today you find more Christians in Eastern Europe, despite the 70 years of brainwashing, indoctrination, persecution, Soviet Union. The church in Russia today is very strong. They survived all that indoctrination, all that persecution, because they were built on the rock of Christ. We need to fear God. If God becomes our enemies, then we are lost and there's no hope. So back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Now, where do I start with this? Okay. You mentioned the armour of God. Now, when, I mean, it's not just happening in the UK. It's obviously well publicised with this Online Safety Act, etc., etc., that people are talking about as crackdown on free speech. Well, I've seen them cracking down on free speech by simply narrowing the Overton window, meaning the interpretation, the Overton window regarding what can be interpreted as offensive or what have you. And they've used the mainstream media to do that. Oh, he said this. Oh, can he say that? All this sort of stuff that you've seen over time, they do. So that essentially it kills free speech. I had a situation recently where I got into a discussion. Someone was telling me and they thought they had a receptive audience with me. You talked about this radical Islam, Peter. And someone was trying to tell me that in the UK, all these people coming in on these boats and stuff like that, and it's all this massive Islamic plot, and they've got their own political party, and they're going to completely take over this country and things like that. And I didn't bother, but I can't argue that point anymore because it's unsafe for me to do so. What I could say is, well, you might want to look at a one-minute YouTube video by Barbara Lerner Spector. And if you go to I just tried this again to check it's still there. If you go to google.com and I just typed in YouTube, one word, Barbara Lerner, and after I typed the Lerner in, it came down at the top of a drop-down list. And the top result has got 426,000 views. It went up 9 years ago. So it's still there, but you can say you might want to or you might not. It's up to you. It's her words, and you can decide if she's telling the truth or not. And going back to, obviously, what's gone on, it gave me, as a broadcaster, three choices. I can either be completely safe and not do a show at all, just end the show, and say, well, I'm doing it because I won't have my free speech, controlled, etc., etc. Or I could just say whatever I wanted, in which case the authorities will shut down the show and probably put me in prison. Or thirdly, do what I believe is putting on the armour of God. And that is, I'll give you an example. I recently finished my parables series, which was 41 episodes of the traditional Christian message. And in one of those, Jesus Christ, they try and trick Jesus Christ into, how would you put it?
Give them ammunition to get him arrested?
Yeah, it was basically when they said to him, render to see, when he said, I think they were asking him if Caesar was his king, and about, and then Christ, it actually says, yeah, it said Christ knew they were trying to trick him. So he said, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's and render to God that which is God's. And I think that we're in a similar sort of time now, that something people say, what they do, and I've seen this happen a lot. You'll get these people protesting migrants coming into the country on these boats, and they'll keep pressing the person they're interviewing. Oh, so what do you think? Well, we need to stop them coming in. Well, how do you do that? Oh, well, do you think that we should sink the boats? Oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, so you think that, do you? So you think it's okay to sink women and children, do you? Do you? All this sort of stuff. And they're literally priming them for that. They're giving you no... They want them to say that because they want to use that and get them arrested. Do you see what I mean? And so this is what they were doing to Jesus Christ back then. They were trying to get him to say something. They expected him to say, well, of course, God is more important to Caesar and you should only serve God, do nothing for Caesar. And then they'll go running off to Caesar and say, oh, look what he said, look what he said. Kill him, which obviously they did later on anyway with Pontius Pilate for another reason. But what are your thoughts on that, Peter, and this armour of God business? Because a lot of people come out and criticise people like myself are being cowards for not just, you know, going completely against the law, but that would also go against the armour of God that we're told to put on in these times, Peter.
Yes, well, the first act on the altar is the belt of truth, and we do need to be truthful, but we need the shield of faith, we need the helmet of salvation, we need to be wise as serpents, we need to be gentle as doves, we need the sword, the spirit, the word of God. We've got to be so cautious. We're dealing with spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And so as a missionary who spent most of my life, in fact, over 43 years, I've been smuggling Bibles into restricted access areas. I've been ministering in areas where it's illegal to be a Christian in many cases, in the Middle East and countries that were communist. Back when the Berlin Wall was up, I was smuggling Bibles behind the Iron Curtain and ministering throughout Eastern Europe, from Bulgaria, Albania, through Yugoslavia, Hungary, Eastern Europe, East Germany, Poland, Romania, all these countries, Czechoslovakia. And we had to be so careful, because if you said the wrong thing, you'd end up in prison. You could get churches arrested. You could get your hosts in trouble. So we had to be very cautious as to how we did everything. And the Christians in East Europe became very wise as to how to do this. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, you may not be able to organize a protest. You may not be able to even speak against these things. But the least you can do is don't repeat the lie. Don't believe the lie. Don't applaud the lie. And so they had to be wise in how they propagate the truth without breaking a law or ending up in prison or giving ammunition to the enemy. For example, as a missionary crossing the border, what's your occupation? Well, my occupation I could put down as teacher, because a lot of what missionary work is teaching. Go and teach all nations, you read in the Great Commission. And in fact, I am very much a teacher, although I could have put down missionary or evangelist, but that would have prevented me getting the visa to come into the country. So I put down teacher. Sometimes I could put down, when I'm going into a communist country, a journalist, which is, I do write about everything I do as well. And I've got radio and TV programs I've written for Christian magazines. I'm a journalist as well as a missionary and an evangelist. So you've got to be careful what you put down. Now, some people I've traveled with have put down a nurse, because that's what they are, medical training. My mother's a nurse. My mother-in-law was also a nurse. There's different things you can put down. You don't have to put down your main occupation as being Christian missionary or Bible smuggler. I mean, that wouldn't be clever, would it? And then we had to be cautious. What do you declare? Well, if I put educational materials in some places, that would be positive. But in some other places, they'd give you an extra tax for educational books, literally. And so you've got to be careful what you declare. And you could get yourself into deep trouble. I was even asked at border posts in Eastern Europe, do you have any guns, drugs, pornography, or Bibles? That's it. Guns, drugs, pornography, or Bibles. Things, pornography? No, don't have any drugs. No, you know, you can resist and refuse some of the things. You don't specifically have to say, I don't have Bibles. But again and again, if they ask you and they get tighter and tighter to it, can you lie in accordance with Christian work? Well, Richard Wurmbrand, who wrote Tortured for Christ, said, render to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar and to God the things that are God's. Caesar doesn't have any right to information that he's going to abuse to harm the innocent. And so he said, as Richard Wurmbrand, who spent 14 years suffering, being tortured for Christ by the communists in Romania, he said, you can lie with a straight face to the communists, because whatever you say, they're going to twist and use to harm the innocent, to persecute, to prevent Bibles reaching the people in need. So he said, if you can't think of a way to outwit them by clever use of terminology, you know, carefully applying the truth, being discriminating, you can lie to them straight to save lives. You know, do you have any persecuted Christians meeting here, or are you harboring someone as a fugitive from the state? Why would you need to tell the truth to somebody who is only going to harm those people? You shouldn't hesitate to be able to say whatever's needed to save innocent lives. And in fact, as Colonel Oliver North once put it, sometimes you have to weigh lies and lives. And when Congress asked why he had lied to them, he's saying, well, if I told you the truth, people would have died. Innocent people would have suffered. I have to weigh lies and lives. Anything said to Congress is going to get in the hands of the enemy. So as a national security advisor, Colonel Oliver North defended the fact that he had lied to Congress on the basis that they would have used the truth in order to endanger innocent people in communist countries where their lives would have been forfeit. So we've got to be careful. We need wisdom. We need discernment. And as somebody who smuggled hundreds of thousands of Bibles into communist and Muslim countries, I can tell you we've used a lot of deception operations in order to do so. And missionaries to restricted access areas need to learn how to be wise. And increasingly, you've got to learn to be wise if you're trying to deal with truth in countries where censorship is strong and where they're trying to penalize you and punish you for standing for truth. And that means you've got to be economical with your use of the truth and how you apply it, and very, very careful when you're speaking to people who have the means and the intention to curtail your freedom, close down your operation, close your church, close down your broadcasting studio, whatever it is. And so you've got to be wise. You've got to use the shield of faith. You've got to use your whole armor of God in order to advance the work without endangering the people that you're trying to serve. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, very important there. And the other thing is this whole idea of communism. Now, there are many people that dispute the similarity between globalism and communism. So what I've got here is the 45 goals of the Communist Manifesto, which were stated in the United States Congress by A.S. Herlong Jr. of Florida on January the 10th of 1963. Okay, I'm not going to read them all out because there are 45, but have a listen to what was said 62 years ago. And then it wasn't happening then, otherwise there wouldn't be goals. But how many of these things are familiar to wherever you are in the world today? It doesn't necessarily just apply to America. Communism and globalism is obviously a global thing. They want this in every country. So here's some of the 45 points. Goals, rather. Capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. Use technical decisions of the courts to weaken basic American institutions by claiming their activities violate civil rights. Get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of teachers' associations. Put the party line in textbooks. Gain control of all student newspapers. Use student riots to foment public protests against programs or organizations which are under communist attack. Infiltrate the press. Get control of book review assignments, editorial writing, policy making positions. Gain control of key positions in radio, TV and motion pictures. Continue discrediting American culture by degrading all forms of artistic expression. An American communist cell was told to eliminate all good sculpture from parks and buildings, substitute shapeless, awkward and meaningless forms. Control art critics and directors of art museums. Our plan is to promote ugliness, repulsive, meaningless art. Eliminate all laws governing obscenity by calling them censorship and a violation of free speech and free press. Break down cultural standards of morality by promoting pornography and obscenity in books, magazines, motion pictures, radio and television. Infiltrate the churches and replace revealed religion with social religion. Discredit the Bible and emphasize the need for intellectual maturity, which does not need a religious crutch. Eliminate prayer or any phase of religious expression in the schools on the grounds that it violates the principle of separation of church and state. Discredit the American Constitution by calling it inadequate, old-fashioned, out of step with modern needs, a hindrance to cooperation between nations on a worldwide basis. I could go on. There's a lot more here. How about this? Transfer some of the powers of arrest from the police to social agencies. Treat all behavioural problems as psychiatric disorders, which no one but psychiatrists can understand or treat. Dominate the psychiatric profession and use mental health laws as a means of gaining coercive control over those who oppose communist goals. Discredit the family as an institution. Encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of parents. Attribute prejudices, mental blocks, and retarding of children to suppressive influence of parents. So, Peter, none of what I just read is unfamiliar to me in England, and this was read out in America. That's what's going on in England today. What are your thoughts?
Yes, there's no doubt that if you look at the globalist agenda and the communist agenda, there's so much overlap. There's no question that the communists have moved into the globalist movement, we did a program on how Gorbachev could get the order of the watermelon, you know, green on the outside, yes, red on the inside. And this is, they use globalist agendas to get control. They don't care about the environment. And so a lot of the environmental movement has been hijacked by the Soviets, that when the Soviet Union collapsed, Gorbachev and his entire Politburo moved over to San Francisco and took over the green agenda and set up the whole Green New Deal. And you can see also in what they did in the agenda, the green agenda from Rio, the Rio agenda, and the agenda 2021 and all of this. You can see how this is the Soviet agenda to get control in the name of saving the planet. Yes, they've got always some interesting justification. But what you can see is the globalist agenda is definitely mirroring a lot of the Soviet agenda. And one of the interesting examples of this is look at the symbol of the Soviet Union and then look at the symbol of the United Nations. Very, very similar, you know, a globe and then the wreath around it and all it, the way that they're depicted. You can see that the whole symbolism even of the globalist United Nations movement and the World Food Program and the World Health Organization, very similar symbols to the symbol for the Soviet Union, and in many cases the same people, as in the case of Gorbachev. So yes, we've got to recognize that globalism is just, it's another term for the Soviet goal, because, you know, even when Barack Hussein Obama was talking about change, well, change is another synonym for revolution. And so, yes, you, like you could say the French Revolution is all about change, the Bolshevik Revolution is all about change. So sometimes they'll use different words like transformation and a change, but what they mean is revolution. And globalism is the ultimate centralization, which, of course, is what communism is all about, is centralization. So be very careful. But I think it's very helpful if we can just look at George Orwell's 1984 book. First of all, it's based in London. And then George Orwell even said he modeled Mini-Truth, or the Ministry of Truth, the propaganda agency on the BBC, of which he once was a propagandist during the Second World War. So here's a man, he didn't base it in Moscow. I first thought when I read 1984, he's talking about the Soviet Union, but he based it in London and he modeled it on the BBC. And then his protagonist was Winston Smith, very Western English kind of terms. You know, it wasn't Vladimir Sikorsky or something like that. And we need to recognize these are warnings, 1984 or Fahrenheit 741 and so on. They are warnings about what's going on in the Western world. And we're seeing it now. To think that censorship can come when you are trying to proclaim the gospel even in the West. A friend of mine who is a veteran of the British Army was arrested along with other street preachers in Bristol for preaching the gospel. Christians have been arrested in Britain for just saying what the Bible teaches on something like perversion, for example, or on a false religion. And I was a guest speaker at a missions conference in Birmingham many years ago. And after giving a Muslim evangelism workshop, which I'd been asked to do, a man came up to me looking very serious and he said, "I liked everything you said. I agree with everything you said, but I need to warn you that if someone here was hostile to you, you could be arrested for hate speech." I said, "What did I say that was wrong?" "No," he said, "you didn't say anything wrong. I'm telling you, if somebody was hostile, they could report you to police and you would have been arrested." And I said, "Why, on what basis?" And he said, "When you were quoting from the Quran." Now, I mean, I quoted accurately from the Quran. When I quoted the jihad verses, I was exposing what the Quran teaches on the subject of jihad. And this man said, if somebody wanted to take it out of context and ignore the fact that this was a Muslim evangelism workshop, how to win Muslims to Christ, if they had presented it in a negative way, I could have been arrested without any evidence being needed. And I thought that's shocking. Britain, the land that almost invented free speech, that free speech could be under such attack that people are in trouble for just quoting facts, quoting sources, and even trying to love their neighbor and win people to Christ, and you can get into trouble. That is extremely serious. And for Keir Starmer to say, you know, Britain invented free speech. Yes, but that's not the point. It's fallen far from that since. And free speech is at risk in a country where you can get into trouble for just saying the truth or just quoting the Bible or just quoting the Quran for that matter. So, yes, I think we're in serious trouble. And that's why we need resistance. We need wisdom. We need to get back to the Bible. We need to support alternative medias. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And please, before you go, can you let the audience know how they can contact you and where they can find your work?
Yes, certainly. Our website is www.frontlinemissionsa.org, frontlinemissionsa.org. My personal email is peter@frontline.org.za, or as the Americans say, ZA, peter@frontline.org.za. And www.frontlinemissionsa.org.
Thank you so much, Peter. Okay, I want to thank all of you for joining us today on the show entitled The Real Story of How to Stand for Faith and Freedom in a Time of Apostasy and Tyranny. Peter and I will be back with you again on Tuesday. I'll be back with you all later in the week. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.